It's Kiribati Language Week 2020. This year's theme is Nurturing Kiribati Language Promotes Our Cultural Identity and Heritage. This morning we have well-respected elder within the Kiribati community who is doing her best to promote cultural identity and heritage. Louisa Humphrey migrated to New Zealand in the 1970s and was part of the Pacific Collection Access Project with Auckland Museum and is a Kiribati team member in Huntly. Last year, Louisa was co-winner of Creative New Zealand's Heritage Artist Award, and she joins us on the line. Kona Māori, Louisa, and thank you so much for joining us.
Kona Māori, everybody, all our Kiribati friends and families in New Zealand. Kona Tanini Māori and Māori Etu.
Let's go back to the beginning. Which island of the Kiribati were you born in, please, Louisa?
I was born on the island of Kuria, which is in the central Kiribati. Grew up there, and as a primary school age, my mother and father took me to the mainland, which is Tarawa, to have my education there.
And how many people were on the island that you were born?
Oh, being little, I wasn't really aware how many people, but there would be about 300 people, maybe, at the very most.
So it's quite a small island. You could walk around it in an hour or so?
It's actually quite a big island. It's the widest island in Kiribati. And at times, it will have very foggy times in the morning. That's very unusual. It is quite wide and not too small an island. It will take more than an hour to walk around it, much more.
And when you went to Tarawa, you stayed in Tarawa for your education, or did you continue to return back to your island? Were your grandparents still on island that you were born?
At the time that I went to primary school, all my family had moved to Tarawa for work purposes, for education for the children, and we brought our grandparents with us. And the grandparents and us will go back on holiday times, school holiday times, but mostly we lived on Tarawa from then on.
And going back to your island of birth, was that by boat? How long did that take?
On a ship, it'll take about 2 days. Yeah, and so most of the time we went on a small boat to go back to the island. And that's my dad's island, but my mother's island is actually Atayang, which is very close to Tarawa, and we can go on a speedboat, and that will take us about an hour to go there on a speedboat. It's very...
A wife. What were they doing on Banaba? Was it to do with the phosphate at the time?
No, it wasn't. My dad was an architect and a builder. He did his training in Australia and came back, and he had a wife before my mum, but she passed away. And my mum was staying with family on Banaba. I'm not quite sure whether she was there to find work or just staying with relations, I think, at the time. And that was where they met. And so my mother had then, by the time they got together, she had to look after my dad's five children. And then we came along and there was five of us as well. So there was 10 of us in our family.
Wow, my heart goes out to your mum already. What an amazing woman. And then the 10 of you all then moved to Tarawa for your education, and then you stayed there before you came to New Zealand, is that right? Could you tell us about your education and what made you come to New Zealand?
Okay, so I was primary school, and eventually my mum and dad decided that they will put me in a Catholic convent, which was at W, and it was called Immaculate Heart College for Girls at the time. At the moment, it's now a combined boys and girls college. But at the time that I went, it was in 1963 I went. Gosh, I have to think well back, Eddie. And went to the college there with the nuns, and the nuns, most of the nuns that were teaching us were from Australia. And very, very strict school, very strict. But I'm glad it was strict, because we kind of gained confidence, and you face hardships, you learn a lot from hardships like that. But yeah, so I was there until 1967, when I passed the, it was the Gilbert Islands at the time, so it was a colony examination, and it made me, I passed with about seven other girls from W, the Immaculate Heart College, and we went to the government school, which was KG5 and EBS. And I went there for my fifth form, just for 1 year. And then lucky I got a scholarship from New Zealand to come and further my education in New Zealand. And I came to New Zealand in the end of 1969. So I started school in 1970 at New Plymouth Girls High. Yes, and from New Plymouth Girls High, I then started my nursing career and did my training in Whangarei.
Wow. So nursing was the first job that you did in New Zealand. You weren't required to go back to the Gilbert Islands, as it was at the time?
Yes, I was. And part of the scholarship was that you're bonded and you've got to go back and serve your country for, I think you're limited to about, the bond was for 2 years. You've got to go back for 2 years, and then you're more or less free to pursue whatever else after that. Unfortunately, during my nursing training, my dad got very sick, and I got permission from the scholarship board to go back to Gidibas. And when I was in Gidibas, I decided I didn't want to pursue nursing anymore. And I was actually, it was part of my life's regret, really, because I didn't sit my state finals. And my state finals, so I'd done 3 years nursing, and my state finals were supposed to have been the year that I left to go to Kiribati, and never really completed my nursing.
Ironic, though, that you went back to take care of your dad, your ailing dad. Then you stayed in the Kiribati for a while before you came back to New Zealand?
Yes, so I, because of my scholarship, and I know that I owed the government a little bit, I worked in the education department for a little while. And in the meantime, I met a young man from England who had come to be a volunteer in Kiribati. And met Jack, and we decided to get married. And it was his final year to be in Kiribati. He was in Kiribati for 3 years. And we decided, because I loved New Zealand so much when I was studying here, that we would make our home in New Zealand. And also because England was just so far away, I thought, from my home in Kiribati.
Yes, I can imagine. And Jack loved you enough to agree to come down to New Zealand.
He did. We had New Zealand, and he also put in Canada as an option because some of his relations were there. But when I inquired about Canada, somebody I knew there wrote to me and said, if I go shopping in the winter, when I come out of the shops, I have to dig my car out of the snow. And that was it for me. I am not going to Canada.
Good choice. I don't think that's how I want to start my shopping trip either. And then New Zealand. Were there many other Kiribati people in New Zealand when you came in the 70s?
No, when we came, I had four other ladies that kind of, we came at different periods, but the same year. And there was four of us, and all of us were married to non-Kiribati and decided to settle in New Zealand. So, and there was kind of the families that we had, about four. And then there were some Kiribati people that came for university. There were some that came for some work opportunities. But very few of us said meeting each other was such a joy because we were lonely and very foreign in New Zealand, looking for housing. And you know, in those days, we met a lot with people who were quite prejudiced to Pacific Island people. And whenever we go to look for a flat, if my husband goes, the answer would be, oh, yes, we have got a flat. But when I come along and they know I'm an islander, suddenly the house is not available. So there were hardships we had to face. But we look forward to meeting each other as Kiribati people and other Pacific Island people that were here as well.
Wow. Amazing, that story of your knowing how racist they were by the different way they treated your husband and the different way that they treated you. You won the Creative New Zealand Award for your weaving. How were you able to maintain that? Because I imagine, or am I wrong, that you didn't weave in those earlier years when you first arrived?
No, when we first arrived, that was kind of not even in our minds. We were too busy trying to find a bit of work, to earn some money to be able to live. So the weaving and that, and the other thing was we thought, oh, you know, there will be no materials that we can use to weave. But as because that was kind of always my interest and very interested in our cultural and things that I've seen my grandmother and my mother doing in the islands, where they would weave a basket, it's sort of functional but arty pieces, and making mats because we needed to sleep on them in Kiribati. That has always been a very interesting thing for me, and so I went, as soon as I knew I wanted to do it and I could do it, my children had grown up a little bit and I had a bit of free time, and I went in and learned and seek some advice from some Maori ladies that were able to teach me how to use harakeke. And that has been my interest ever since, and realizing that whatever we do in Kiribati with pandanus leaves, we can do with the harakeke as well.
Now, you were talking about how your mum used to weave and your grandma used to weave. Did you learn also to weave at the time when you were young, or was that a skill you picked up when you met up with the Maori weavers?
I learned in the islands, and you learned with, you know, functional things that are easier and within your capability as a child. So the weaving techniques and things were taught as a young girl, but I did develop my skills later on. But it was very much based on our own artifacts, more than Maori weaving. But in the long run, really, when you look at Maori weaving, it all is very similar to ours. It all stems from the islands, because really, after all, I hope the Maoris don't disagree with me, but Tangata Whenua really originally came from the islands as well.
What I loved about the work and about the art pieces that you wore at the awards last year when you received that award was the fact that you maintain the Kiribati style of the headdress and everything that you've been able to revive all of those pieces. Have you worked with other Kiribati weavers to bring those designs to the standard that you have them now?
Very much so. And we run workshops in Auckland that run by some of the other organizations that are able to get funding. And just whenever we can be together, we will run little working and weaving workshops and trying to teach them that don't give up your skills of weaving just because there's no material. So we started teaching them about the use of harakeke. And only just before lockdown, actually, we had a big workshop in Auckland where we used flax to weave our men dancing mats. And that was very successful. And we've run several workshops like that where we've done the skirts, our uniquely Kiribati style of dancing skirts, our headgear, our bodice. And so as well as running the workshops with our Kiribati people to be able to maintain that skill that they had in Kiribati. Don't give it up, because it's part of you. The other big thing that we've done is the revival of the otanga. The otanga is our war armor in Kiribati. And we've been able to actually go back to Kiribati, talk to people there, and find that actually it's almost a lost art. There's nobody that we could find in Kiribati at the time we went that could do it. And so we decided, a group of us decided that we were going to revive this art. And we went back and collected string, which is made out of coconut husk, and brought bagfuls of these strings back to Kiribati and did the otanga, which has now been exhibited in Brisbane. And we are hoping to go around all our communities in New Zealand and show them that it is possible to keep these skills. Because most of our skills in these art forms, as they call it, is they're functional things. And so with the war armor, because there's no wars anymore, there's no need to make them. And it'll be such a pity to actually lose that. And we've got war armors all over the world in museums, but yet there's one very old, dilapidated one in Kiribati, and most of the people have never seen one in Kiribati.
How wonderful is that? Looking back on when you first arrived and you were looking forward to catching up with the only three other Kiribati women in New Zealand, it must warm your heart to see that there are so many more in New Zealand, and to see that it is now the Kiribati language is recognized as a language of New Zealand.
Oh, you said it. It warms my heart, because we worked hard. When I first came, Kiribati wasn't even classed as part of the island. We were other. We couldn't be on the list of Pacific Island people, because they didn't think, I don't know why, but that was in those days. So now there's so many Kiribati people here, and I am so glad that we are finally recognize that we have a language that should be honored and preserved. And but we worked really hard, and regardless of the fact that we weren't given a week long or a language week to celebrate our language, we have always tried to maintain it within our different communities. So I hope that all of us with these unique languages don't just do it in the week we're given, that we continue to practice and we continue to teach our language and be proud of it, and talk to other people that we have this lovely, unique language that they might be interested in learning as well.
Heritage artist and proud Ngi Kiribati, Louisa Humphrey, thank you for your time, and thank you for all that you've done for the Kiribati, the Pasifika, and the New Zealand community.
Thank you very much for your time, and I hope that all our Kiribati people are having lovely celebrations, not only the Language Week, but also our commemoration of our 41st independence. Thank you.